This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is the LA Local Morning Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back this afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
Will we see some more renter protections after these fires? There's more pushback around where to process some of that hazardous debris. Third time we've seen this fight. But first, the rain coming back.
Yeah, rain coming back, and it's an atmospheric river. Oh, we don't like that phrase. PCH will be closing again because of this. That's going to happen later this afternoon. But residents in the Palisades, you can still get through. And the mayor's office says that existing pass you have, that's enough. You don't need to get a new one. That existing pass is enough to get you through. Let's get more live from the fire zone there in the Palisades and our John Baird.
And that's good news for the residents. Certainly, probably not great news that this is closing again for people who like to cruise up PCH, especially after they just opened the whole thing yesterday. And traffic, by the way, just to give you an example, traffic is just inching along right now because people are going up there. The residents in the Palisades area, contractors going up into the zones to get some work done as a result of this fire. But, you know, there is concern that we could have mudslides. I was talking to Lauren Wunder from Caltrans, who says they've been coordinating with LA County Public Works and decided to go ahead and close that section of road.
A joint decision was made that we close PCH out of an abundance of caution to protect motorists. If you are a resident in the Pacific Palisades, the city is allowing you to get in. You can access it through Chautauqua, but you must have that resident pass and proof of residency, proof of your ID with you.
And again, they're going to close PCH from Chautauqua to Carbon Beach Terrace in Malibu at 3 o'clock today. That stretch is going to be closed until sometime Friday, assuming they don't have any mudslides or rocks come down. So residents can still get in, contractors can still get in the Palisades area, but other people will not be able to access that stretch of PCH.
All right, John, thanks. A deadline to clear the toxic debris from the fires, raising concerns about health risks in communities in LA County. Residents in the San Gabriel Valley concerned about storing the waste at a site in Irwindale. Azusa City Council holding a meeting with some updates. One person telling KCAL News she's worried about this quick cleanup.
The president said, let's do this fast and let's move on. But he didn't think about the consequences that some people's going to face.
Some other people concerned that moving the waste close to the San Gabriel River could be dangerous. The EPA says the materials, though, safely contained.
At the floor, there's a thick plastic liner, and then over top of that, we have mats covering the whole area. The stuff that we bring is in a double-lined plastic bag. We put it down on a covered table, open it up, and then we sort it into boxes, which are lined. So the materials never touch the ground.
Says the reason for the quick cleanup, there was pressure from the government to clear the area, let people get back to their homes. Also, back and forth now at a meeting last night about a potential site being ID'd for some more of this waste in Malibu, right near the Civic Center.
Our Karen Adams talked to a lawyer from Altadena, displaced because of the Eaton fire, now fighting for restorative justice for her family and others.
Kelsey Zemet has teamed up with the law firms McNicholas & McNicholas and the Becker Law Group to host free legal lunch and learn sessions.
The lunch is to come together as a community and just hug each other, see each other, feed each other, nourish each other. And the learn part is educating ourselves about what the path forward looks like and how insurance is going to play a role here. And if insurance is not enough to rebuild, how litigation can play a role here. It's also really important to talk about things like remediation and compare notes on toxicity testing, what we're doing in our homes. It's really what we hope is a comprehensive get together where we can not only connect as a community, but we can also educate ourselves and become advocates moving forward to repair what has happened.
The first session is this Saturday, the 8th at noon at the El Portal Restaurant in Pasadena.
That's our Karen Adams. So President Trump is thinking about an executive order that could dismantle the Department of Education. Elon Musk and Doge are working inside the department to cut spending and staff. And if Trump is able to get rid of the Department of Education, what would be the impact? We talked with Rachel Pereira. She's a fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institute. This idea has been talked about over the years, well before Donald Trump. And the idea is that the feds have no constitutional authority to be involved in school learning or jobs, that this is really federal meddling. What's the truth in that? And what's the value of maybe kicking it more to the states?
Sure. That's a great question. So it is true that there is no sort of constitutional right to a public education in the U.S., but there's a long history of federal intervention starting in the mid-1960s that aimed to expand educational opportunities through the Title I program, which provides additional funding to schools in poor communities, and through things like the Pell Grant, which provides additional opportunities to students to have access to higher education if they don't have the means to pay for tuition. And so while there isn't a federal mandate in the U.S. Constitution, there's a long history of federal efforts in that aim to make up for shortcomings in how states were administering education systems prior to federal intervention, right? The history of federal intervention is tied to efforts to address state-sponsored inequality, state-sponsored racial discrimination. And so the U.S. Department of Education in some ways was created to consolidate work that had started mid-century in efforts to make up for gaps in the ways states were administering their education, their educational institutions.
Criticism seems to be the money's not well spent because our school scores aren't great. We're not exactly leading the world. But again, local school districts and states, they're what, like 90% of the actual funding? So that wouldn't be a DOE problem.
Right, exactly. And the DOE does very little in terms of, you know, mandating how states administer, curriculum, how states administer education. Federal funding in K-12 only makes up 9 to 10% of school budgets, and they have very little oversight in terms of how states, decide on curriculum, how states are making key educational policy decisions that shape what K-12 schools look like. In the U.S., K-12 education policy is very much a state issue. Federal policy is aimed at leveling the floor. It's aimed at ensuring everyone has access to those schools administered by states and local school districts.
So there are big political demands and gestures, and then there's the reality of getting support to make these things happen. What's the reality of this dismantling going forward? And, you know, what's your opinion as perhaps a better play to make the system work better?
That's a great question. So the U.S. Department of Education was created by Congress, by an act of Congress in 1979 to consolidate work in education that was happening across different agencies. And what that work entails is mandated by Congress. And to dismantle the department would also require an act of Congress. That means you would need 60 votes in the Senate, which would mean you need more than the Republican majority has. And so it's very unlikely we actually see an act of Congress, pass in the next 4 years.
That is Rachel Pereira, fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institute.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
China says, oh yeah, fires back with its own tariffs, and a broccoli sold at some Walmarts, well, could be deadly. Those stories and more coming up as 20 minutes of nonstop news continues.
There's a Senate committee voting to advance RFK Jr.'s nomination to lead Health and Human Services. So 14-13 party lines. Nomination now goes to a full Senate vote. President Trump's pick for Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, faces a vote this afternoon. Intelligence panel expected to vote behind closed doors. We talked to CBS Capitol Hill reporter Torian Small says Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young could prevent Gabbard from advancing to that full Senate vote.
He didn't necessarily say where he was going to vote, but reports about him being on the fence caused a lot of people in Trump's world, including Elon Musk, to call him out. Elon took to his social media page and called him a deep state puppet. Apparently, they had a conversation over the weekend, and he has since walked that back. But it's just another potential wrinkle in this threat there.
She does have Susan Collins, a senator from Maine, saying she'll support Gabbard's nomination today and going forward.
China firing back at the U.S. with retaliatory taxes, tariffs of its own. Here's CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick.
China may be hoping for a pause in tariffs, which Canada and Mexico received. But in the meantime, it's prepared several measures, including tariffs on coal, crude oil, agriculture machinery, and large engine vehicles imported from the U.S. The tariffs would take effect next Monday. Trump does plan to speak with Chinese President Xi in the next few days.
The last time there was a trade war between the U.S. and China was in 2018.
UC Berkeley, among five universities being looked at now by the administration. Bob Brill says it involves an investigation of anti-Semitism.
The Justice Department probe stems from protests by pro-Palestinians after Israel began bombing Gaza. That, of course, took place after the October attack on Israel by Hamas. The federal government promised a tougher stance against universities unless they do more to quell violence against Jewish students. It says President Biden did not do enough. Several college chiefs were called before Congress over the demonstrations. Some were heavily chastised. Some lost their jobs. The president called for aggressive action to fight anti-Jewish bias on campuses, including deporting foreign students who have participated in pro-Palestinian protests. Aside from Berkeley, the others are Columbia, University of Minnesota, Northwestern, and Portland State. I'm Bob Brill, KNX News, 97.1 FM.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has become the first foreign leader to meet with the president in the White House. It's going to happen later today.
Netanyahu is in Washington amid challenges from within his government and his ongoing trial on corruption charges. Hardliners in Israel want him to return to fighting Hamas in Gaza once the first stage of the ceasefire ends, while President Trump has said he wants to end all wars. Israeli press reports say the two men could disagree on this, as well as a demand by Saudi Arabia for progress toward a Palestinian state as a condition for normalization with Israel.
Linda Gradstein there in Jerusalem. The two leaders also expected to talk about Iran's nuclear program.
Got a broccoli recall sold at Walmarts in 20 states, including ours. This is Braga Fresh Market Side Broccoli Florets, about 12-ounce bags, washed, ready to eat. A random sample found listeria, though. If you got it, throw it out. It can make you sick. For high-risk people, it can be deadly. FDA is making this the highest-level recall warning for the produce.
Young patients suffering mental health issues now have a new place to turn. Kathy Whitman reports on a portal available statewide to medical professionals.
More young people are experiencing feelings of depression and anxiety these days, and their primary care providers aren't always equipped to handle their concerns. Now there's a web portal where they can get help for their patients called CalMap.
A PCP can call us anytime and just request guidance on a patient that they're seeing right there and then in the moment, or somebody that they saw that day.
UCSF's Dr. Petra Steinbuschel is director of the portal. She says it's not direct care, but provides resources with educational materials, support, and guidance.
So that we're elevating everyone's abilities to serve more and more families.
The need arose after young people were forced to isolate during the pandemic.
We were able to provide some real-time consultation just when they needed it most.
I'm Kathy Whitman, KNX News 97.1 FM.
How much time are the teens spending on their phones in school? Here's correspondent Michael George.
Teens spend an average of 1.5 hours of their school day on their phones. A study in JAMA looked at smartphone use among teens ages 13 to 18 and found while overall they're spending an average of 6 hours a day on their phones, a quarter of that use happens at school. This comes as some states look to ban phone use in schools altogether.
The LAUSD ban on phones will begin February 18th.
Some of the schools already have, the ban in place.
How's that going for them?
Yeah, as I've talked to some of the parents that say their kids have to put their phones in plastic bags and they kind of zip them up and they can't get to them until the end of the day. But during the course of the day, they carry them around and they found ways to sort of turn, touch the buttons and turn on their phones and like very carefully call and say, Mom.
Mom, I'm talking through a bag.
Talking through a bag.
Pick me up at 3:30.
So, yeah, kids are getting around it, at least for now. 7:45.
Investigation into what caused the deadly mid-air collision over D.C. between the American Airlines jet and the Army Black Hawk continues. Black boxes have been recovered. Investigators looking at what role air traffic control played. Live now with more on the investigation, KNX News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Yeah, Peter, we say the investigation continues, but you've got a little bit more, the latest on what investigators know. So tell us.
Yeah, of course, it's what they don't know, which is driving them to find out the probable cause. And that report, even though they're going to issue it in about 30 days, may not even contain that answer. But here's what they do know. The helicopter was off course. They do know that it was flying about 175 feet higher than its previously assigned and approved altitude. And they also know that when the tower called the helicopter to report the area, the helicopter acknowledged that he saw it. It's leaving get us to believe that what he thought he saw was another plane and not the American Eagle flight. So the immediate result from all this is the FAA banned low-level helicopter flying anywhere near the Reagan area. Should have done years ago. The long-term effects of this are to be seen as the investigation continues.
You've made comparisons before to a crash decades ago. This was another mid-air. This was a PSA flight, LAX to San Diego. What did we learn after that? That we might, apply here? And could we learn some things after this one that we see changes going forward?
Yeah, that was PSA Flight 182 on September 20th, 1978, another story that I covered, sadly. It was a 727 from Los Angeles to San Diego. And much like the American flight that we talked about, it was on its final approach to Lindbergh Field, where the tower called and told that there was traffic in the area. In this case, the PSA said yes, but the traffic didn't see the PSA plane into the back of it by the right wing, but he died. As a result of the crash alone, the FAA put into place what we call the TCA. They have one at LAX, they have one at San Diego, they have one in every major airport. It's called a terminal control area. It's severely restricted airspace at a terminal and at an area that no plane can fly into unless they're allowed to come in
All right, we're starting to lose. We're having some trouble with your connection there. But yeah, we've talked a little bit about that with you. I think we talked about that last week, Peter. So we'll get more as they learn more out there in D.C. But yeah, there's questions being raised as to, was that chopper too high? Did they have their night vision goggles on when maybe they were doing their training mission and there's so many bright lights, especially around Reagan? So when they learn more, and again, we'll get that report coming up. We'll bring that to you as well, obviously.
You know, on the subject of travel, let's talk just for a second about Yosemite. They're planning to reduce traffic and the long waits, asking visitors to make reservations, but that is on hold. The Trump administration reviewing that. It was supposed to start this year. Some of the people support the plan because they say it could help with overcrowding. Others worry it might limit access to the park. Concerned also about how it might affect some of the local businesses. For now, a temporary reservation system will be used for certain weekends, and that starts this month.